Okay. I'm putting this at the top of the episode. Will be good. We will talk for 16 minutes about other things, but these chapters are good. Cue the motherfucking intro. Let's go.
What's up, hot queens?
Did you bring the baby gherkins?
This is when I really felt like maybe we shouldn't do this podcast.
Astronomical.
I hate to see it.
Wasted potential.
Are you drunk?
I am so drunk right now.
Welcome to Bad Author Book Club, where we're not like other authors, we're worse. I'm Ryan LaSala.
And I'm Claribel A. Ortega, and we are two authors reading the most bizarre fiction we can find.
Before we get to that, I wanted to invite everyone to seek us out on social media, find us on Discord. All the links to follow us personally or the show itself are in our show notes. We've got lots of exciting things on the horizon, and we don't want you to miss any of it. Specifically, check us out on Discord, because I was just sending Claribel links to this, but the fan art that we have been getting,
it is so deeply unhinged, so deranged.
It's very funny. It's like I sent Claribel an image that is one of the thumb people from Spy Kids with Lex, who's one of the main characters, driving around on an air speeder. And it's like a small film that someone created.
It's amazing.
It's so, so good. We love it. And I suspect other people will love it too. So yes, find the invite link for our Discord in our show notes and meet us there to discuss all of the pressing, incredible details in this amazing book. We'll see you there. So Angel, how are you? Give me the updates. How's it going?
Oh, it's going. So I've started doing something a little bit exciting.
Which is that,
I feel like I'm talking to like my close circle of friends when I'm here.
Yes.
So I am going on sub with a young adult book very soon.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Very soon. And for those of you who don't know, I've been trying to publish a young adult book since like 2016, right? Like that was like my initial goal.
Mm-hmm.
When I got into publishing, it just so happened that I debuted as a middle grade. And my goal with my agent has been since then to sort of like build up my middle grade career and then launch me in YA.
Yes.
So I think we've accomplished the getting me solidly into middle grade.
I did a good job. I would say so.
I think I'm good.
Few people as solid as you in middle grade right now. So yeah.
So I finally I'm doing like the last touch revisions on this young adult book that I started writing like so long ago, and mm-hmm. I've revised a couple of times and I'm really excited about it. But what I've started doing is I've actually started posting about it more often and like planning posts and like TikToks to like talk more about like the books and the tropes. And mm-hmm. it's really funny because like I famously always say like I'm really bad at writing romance, and somehow this book has so many really good romantic moments in it. And I was like, who wrote this? Who is she?
I'm so proud of you. I know that you have been working on this on and off, because I know that you've been prioritizing. You have like a zillion projects going on too. And I know that this has sort of been in your orbit for a time. And I also know what it means to you to be able to like be working on this and to finally reach the part where you get to send it out on sub. Like, I'm so excited. Like,
I know.
It's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun.
It's really exciting. And it's especially exciting because like I actually made a video about this. There is an element of like more calm and quietness when you're a middle grade author as opposed to YA. Like I will get like feral children sometimes like on my TikTok, like leaving like messages in like all caps. But then they move on and like do other stuff. They don't really camp out on like authors' pages like that.
Right.
Whereas YA readers is like a whole other thing. So like mm-hmm. even seeing like two or three people be like, oh my God, this sounds so good. I'm really excited for this. I hope it comes out. It's like so fun for me because I'm not really used to getting those levels of like social media interaction in the same way. So it's been fun and so scary. Because also famously, the first time I was talking about one of my YAs on social media, a group of people who were my quote unquote friends were talking shit about me in a Discord.
Wait, really?
Or in a Slack group or some crazy shit.
Oh my God, the shit talking Slack groups of publishing. My God, wait, I don't remember this. Or maybe I do, but
I can tell you later. But basically, I was talking about it on like Twitter, like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I really wish that like publishing would take a chance on this. And apparently someone was like, well, if it was any good, it would have gotten bought like picked up by now.
Well,
which ate me up because nobody picked it up. Yeah,
They got you.
But I just, it was really shitty because this person was supposed to be my friend.
Wait, can you mouth the person's name to me?
Well, I could just mute myself for a second.
Just for the drama, Clarabelle.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Jesus. Okay, yes, this tracks. Uh-huh. This uh-huh. clicks. Bitch, if you're out there and you know that we're talking about you, we remember. The North remembers.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm never going to like talk about who it was publicly or anything like that. It was a long time ago. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But there are certain, it's hard to put yourself out there. It's hard to, even as an author who has a bunch of books out there, like it can be scary to mm-hmm. feel exposed when mm-hmm. you are showing like a new vulnerable side to yourself.
Yeah.
And like, my experience with it last time was A, it didn't sell, and B, I got shit talked by supposed friends in private.
Worst possible experience.
Seriously. So now I'm quite nervous, but like, I'm also hoping that like, I get like a really big book deal, because then like, what better revenge?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And mm-hmm. the huge irony is you're talking about like the insecurity this is sort of bred into you, and that person is the least secure person I fucking know. Like,
oh my God, yes.
Like, totally. Like, they're in shambles all the time. And
all the time.
Like, that kind of conversation, even the need to have a Slack group where you're, like, shit-talking people comes out of insecurity. And insecurity is something that you can give away, right? And so, mm-hmm. But, like, clearly you've conquered it. Like, here you are on the other side of an extremely successful, like, middle grade rock solid career. You've worked on this. There's excitement already for it. So I've got my fingers crossed. We never know what's going to happen, but I am so excited that you even took the steps to get this far, because that in this world is quite remarkable. Many people would not.
Yeah, I think part of it, like looking back on like why it took me so long to actually finish revising it, I think the fear was definitely part of what held me back.
Yeah.
I also think I didn't have the chops to write the book that way that it needed to, but like you don't know that in the moment, right? Like, dude, you just know like problems keep cropping up, you don't know how to fix them. This is the first time I revised it and I was like, okay, this is solid. Like this is a really good foundation for a book that like an editor will be able to help me make something really shiny mm-hmm. and really great for like my new young adult readers, which those are like the Witchlings readers. Like, they will be young adult readers by then, which is so scary and weird.
The difference between this book and from what I know about it and what I've read of it in like a past version and Witchlings is wild.
Oh my God. And it's so much worse now, Ryan. Like, you don't even know. I'll send it to you once it's all done. We're like wrapping things up with it. But but yeah, it's exciting and fun and sort of like really cool to be able to talk about something in a whole new age category for a whole new audience. And I'm really hopeful for the future to see what happens with it. I'm sure I'll tell stuff to our listeners before I'm supposed to or hint at things, because I'm really bad at keeping secrets. So mm-hmm. But it's still a little ways off submission mm-hmm. but close enough that I feel it like breathing down my neck a little bit.
Ooh, I'm excited. Yes, we will have the scoop in the Bad Author Book Club. Let's see, what updates do I have?
Tell us.
Not much. I Halloween and like October in general is such a busy time for me and for you too. But like, if you write anything spooky or like fantastical or like, mm-hmm. you know, I write horror. And so like, I tend to be asked to do many things on Halloween, but also I have like a very active Halloween calendar. So I feel like I'm still recovering from the many, many things I was doing in October. And I'm not even done with like travel for Beholder. I'm doing Y'all Fest coming up in a few weeks. And then there's also like Anime NYC, which I don't have to travel to, but just sort of these like big weekend long trips. So I'm taking the time while I'm at home to try to kind of reset a little bit because I have to write another book by March. And I know what the book's about. I have it completely outlined, but the next thing I have to do is actually sit down and write it. And before I do that, though, I'm really trying to make a concerted effort to, like, reset my space because I know that once I start writing, I am going to let everything fall into disrepair. Mm-hmm. And I'm still putting things back together from the disrepair of, like, launching Beholder and, like, my room is, like, a mess and there's, like, clothes everywhere. And so yesterday I finally, like, bit the bullet and cleaned my desk. Like, that's where I'm starting. And it feels great. Like, I feel so much better, like, being able to see, like, the corners of my desk. I haven't seen them in eons.
Isn't that so wild how much that can help? Just, cleaning up, opening the windows, getting, like, fresh air circulating mm-hmm. in your place. Like, all of those things are really, really important.
Totally, totally. And so I now feel, even though, like, there's no real correlation between this, like, for whatever reason, organizing my physical space tends to, what am I trying to say? I guess there is a correlation between like what my like the inside of my head looks like and what my space looks like, that, you know, those things are reflections of one another. And I found that like, yeah, like you can sort of clean house in your head and then that'll lead to you like maybe feeling more motivated to like clean up your apartment or something like that, too. But I found that the reverse works for me, that if I take the time, like even if I feel terrible about it and like I want to do nothing else, like if I actually take the time to like reset my space, it works backwards. And then my head suddenly feels a lot less cluttered as well, too. So I want to try to make an effort to kind of like do that, see how it goes. But I am excited because it does mean that like I'm about to start a new book. So I'm very psyched. And I can guarantee that I'm going to be much less hinged moving forward as that becomes something that I get trapped within for the next couple of months. But don't you worry, I will take everyone along for the ride. I've also been posting a lot more on TikTok about like my writing process, and those videos have been very popular.
I am really loving them. I feel like you really hit a good stride of like giving advice in your own natural voice.
Yeah.
And like in the like it just feels like I'm having a conversation with you,
yeah,
which is great because I feel like you're someone who's easy to talk to and listen to. Mm-hmm. So like when that comes across in your TikToks, I'm like, yes, work.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
I just am so sick of seeing people on TikTok posting advice and I'm like, oh, you are,
don't get me started.
Like what do you know about any of this stuff?
Why are you talking?
Right,
like people who don't, like people who have very like openly admitted, like, I found all this out during one night of research.
Yeah.
Don't, like, there was this one person who was, like, giving facts of traditional publishing.
Oh, my God.
And they were all wrong. And this person has never worked in, been traditionally published, doesn't have an agent, and, like, fully admitted, like, I knew after one night of research, after finding all this out, that, like, this wasn't the right path for me. And I'm like, you found out all wrong info, though, because you probably just listened to what you wanted to hear.
Also, you probably sought out other people like you who see one or two things and extrapolate a point and make a judgment about an entire section of an industry. And now here you are doing the exact same thing. And someone else is going to do one night of research and they're going to find your video. And this is going to be like a self-perpetuating, like, corruption. And it just drives me fucking crazy. So I don't want to be a tutor to people, or really I don't see myself as like a mentor, but I do like to be transparent about like my own journey too. So yeah, if for whatever reason our listeners don't get enough behind the scenes from our podcast, if you find either of us on like TikTok specifically right now, I think both of us do a pretty good job of like piercing the veil, as they call it, and showing that we also I don't know how to say this politely. We're also successful. So if you want this point of view of people who are not like totally embittered by like, you know, a lack of success, like, or you want like a combination of like, because we also talk about our failures quite often, right? Mm. Like you can seek us out and we can be that for you.
Yeah, I think we also do a really good job of sort of like explaining that, like, even though we experience things a certain way, sometimes they can happen differently. Like, so different. The thing about publishing that makes it really hard is that it's like really easy to form a conspiracy theory in the same way that it's easy to form a conspiracy theory in the real world, which is if you take a grain of truth and sort of like expand that into like whatever wackadoodle thing you want to tell people, then it feels more real, right? Because if you tell people like, yeah, traditionally published authors only get like 5 to 10% royalty rates, technically that is true in some cases. However, it's also true that we're making those royalty rates off of the list price, whereas publishers are making it off of the wholesale price. So it is completely different. It changes like the ratio, it changes everything, but they don't explain that. They don't go deeper into it because they see a stat and they run with it without looking at like what the implications of those stats are. And it really does bother me because like not only is it discouraging for newer authors, especially marginalized authors, but it's also spreading misinformation because you're trying to cope with the decision that you made. Like, if you're happy with the decision that you made, be happy with it. Don't try to like convince everyone else that your way is the only way. That is what bothers me.
Yeah, it's a mess. Speaking of messes,
oh, here we go, I guess. Chapter 15, After the Emergence Ball, Livia.
Just after. We don't know when. The countdowns, they're a thing of the past. Here we are on the other side of the emergence ball.
Fuck the countdown. And time, who is she?
And I want to remind you, you were the one who was like, I want to get back to Livia's chapters. Well, I'm sure you feel goofy, silly now.
You know what? I should have never said shit.
Yes.
Because, okay, technically this is sometime after the emergence ball.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't really giving what I was hoping it would give. Which, you know what? It's my fault. Yes. It's my fault for believing. For a moment, I was Ryan-coded. Oh, and I believed. in an unhinged woman for no reason.
Listen, though. I don't fault you now that you've said it's Ryan-coded. Now I have to defend you, you motherfucker. But listen. This is the, like, this could be such an interesting moment. Like, Livia was just almost assassinated. So it stands to reason that the next time we hop into her point of view, it's going to be, like, chaos. Like, the moments after. Or it's going to be, you know, like, the fallout from this. None of that happens. What we get instead is that she is, I don't actually know where she is physically in this chapter. Because it's mostly just her, like, reflecting, and she's like, from my isolated summit I watch the world beneath me, and I like, and I feel so stranded in my, like, we're sort of back to like that kind of like melancholic writing. And all she's doing is, like every other fucking chapter in this book, is she's recounting to us in summary what has gone on. And all that's gone on for the past couple of days, I don't know, or like maybe it's like been a week even, we don't know, her reputation has been tarnished by the assassination attempt, and Marius has been desperately trying to find her a suitor, and that hasn't been going well. There's very little like sense that like, oh my god, you were almost just killed. That's not real. That doesn't really like play in her thoughts.
Yeah, at all. It's very strange. Like, that part of it is very strange, especially for other moments that are going to come later on that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
I would have loved for it to pick up right where it left off with Kane being dragged away.
Yes.
It would have been so impactful to watch the actual, what are the men called? The proper young men see them leaving one by one, like, apologies, I gotta get the fuck out of here. And like Marius like begging them, please stay. And like Livia in that moment realizing, what if I was wrong this whole time? Like, this thing that I like put down all these years, like, now finally I'm watching my future crumble before me and realizing I'm gonna become this like isolated person that I never really wanted to be.
Yeah.
Because as it stands right now, she does sort of have that revelation of like, oh shit, my future's ruined. But it's like, you never cared about that before though. Like, in what moment did that snap happen? I would have liked to watch it happen because it was, it went from like, I hate this. I don't want to get married. Like, fuck etiquette class. All of that is bullshit to my life is ruined. What am I going to do? Nobody wants to look at me. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay. When did that change happen? We need to see it. It's like such an important pivotal moment, and they just robbed us of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love the idea of this picking up like right after her watching her future trickle away as like all these guests leave her estate. Instead, I don't really know where she's standing in the chapter, but she's recounting how she, you know, has hidden in the pantry to listen in on meetings that Marius is having with various people, and she's trying to kind of basically like still arrange a marriage. Yeah. And the person who's taking this the hardest is the governess. Who had a full mentee bee, and it is
a full one.
She like, so
it's why her tits are so big. It's because her heart is huge and it needs to fit.
She can't take it. And so the governess apparently fell into some sort of like torpor and was on bed rest. It was like Livia was literally sitting and keeping vigil over the governess, who was like tossing and turning in her sleep like she has the consumption, occasionally reaching out to grab Livia and be like, Livia, like, don't forget to fold your laundry, or like, yeah, Livia, do you want
don't
to crumb
climb trees.
Don't climb trees or you'll get scraped again. And then this went on for like days. That's how we know time has passed, because the governess is the one that's most broken up about this. And then she was shipped off to like a rehabilitation facility that is said to be like a place for vacation. But according to Livia, it's like they're going to like electrocute the fuck out of the governess.
Yeah, she's in for a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest experience.
Nurse Ratchet. She's like Nurse Ratchet. Coming. Even bigger tits.
Even bigger tits.
They're going to have
it'll be a battle.
It's going to be
a tit off.
Bouncy house battle between these two. But I like... Why? I don't know why. I guess that's a stupid question at this point, but like, like that person, like she, like the governess had like a mental breakdown, and they get like, mind you, this is like all in summary, which is bizarre because we could have done this in like present tense summary. Like it could have started where you said, and then we could have gone through, like we could have kind of quickly done this. So this book like continuously elapses time in like the past tense. So it's all review, but I'm like, why couldn't this just be in present tense? Like it could still be a summary. It could start where you said, and then we could go through the, you know, the things that have happened since then, and like alongside. I don't really get it, but yeah, like this has all happened in the past, but it also leaves the question of like, okay, well, what's happening in the present? And I might be wrong about this, but I do believe that Livia is just standing at the edge of her island, because that's kind of where the chapter ends with her, and I think that's just where she's been the whole time.
Yeah, I think so. I was like, is she like on a balcony, or like she was overlooking something, because she was watching like the carrier cars or whatever come in and out. So she was somewhere outside. The thing that bothered me about the whole governess thing is that like she's never really like she did, I guess, love the governess at one point. But like now all of a sudden she's like, I failed her. Like I'm not able to like support her after all the
way
support
that
she's given me.
Yes.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? You literally, all you did was complain about her like for so long. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, this person who supported me. Like they're always like kind of, they're always gaslighting us about the relationships that Livia has had and Lex has had with people without actually showing us any of those moments. It's very, very frustrating.
Right. Like we were there, and all of this book has taken place in the past, bringing us up to like the present day events. So where were these moments where like the literal line is, here we go, in her greatest time of need, I can't return the comfort and support she's given me. But you hated each other, and also you spited her constantly.
Yeah. And she literally says, I have failed her. Like, bro.
Okay. Oh, here's what needed to happen. She needed to see, as her future was falling apart, and it really set in that this is the thing all along that she was setting herself up for by being so recalcitrant to like all of the lessons and the governess and the tutoring. Like she needed to realize that like, oh my God, there's a real threat here, and that the people in my life were trying to help me the only way that they knew how, and I made their lives so hard, and now it's too late, and it's not only ruined my life, but it's like also ruined theirs. Like, my actions do have an impact on the people around me that have been charged with my welfare. Like, that's a very, like,
extremely
YA lesson, right? Because that's something that, like, a child can't necessarily conceive of, but a teen can, right? Like, some, yeah, in some children, sure, but, like, I feel like that's something that, like, a lot of people realize, like, as they approach adulthood and they sort of are able to understand adults a little bit better while also sort of still being in the shoes of a kid, right? Like a teen, an adolescent. Mm. So that would have been a great thing for her to realize. And I don't even think this is even remotely what they were trying to say, but it's just what we're sort of like adding in here. It makes no sense the way that it's written.
Yeah, it makes zero sense. I really agree with you. I wish that they had taken that approach, but they can't do anything right. So
wait, what about the island that smells like vomit? Can we talk about that for a second?
We're gonna get to that.
Okay, tell me.
In a second. Okay. It's very important. I just want to point out that, like, I am at least happy that Marius reassures her that she's the actual victim.
That's great. Yes.
In this situation, because it's like everyone, like when I'm talking the maids, the garden crew, like nobody wants to even look in Livia's direction.
Yeah.
Which is like such an interesting kind of examination of like what violence against women in this world means, mm-hmm, and like how people react to it. But it makes me, it feels a little bit at odds with like how much women are meant to like be pure and proper. Mm-hmm. Are they blaming her for getting attacked? Like,
it's unclear. And that's the big, this was going to be my thorn for the chapter until something else happens a little bit later. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, at no point does Livia articulate what exactly ruined her reputation. It's just that there's been a scandal, and it's this really sort of juvenile idea of like, oh my God, like there's been like a scandal and we don't need to investigate any further. It's just the fact that there was a scandal at all. But again, like, this is the premier heiress of the fucking islands with the tiniest waist, who's the best at balancing on floating platform. Like, this is the baddest bitch ever. So you'd think that there'd be like some recourse against the blemish of like a scandal that she didn't even cause. Like, she's clearly the victim of it. But yeah, I don't know why, like, even reading this and talking about it now, I still don't quite understand what about what happened has anything to do with ruining her reputation.
Right. That's what I mean, too. So, like, and also, does this carry over to, like, other instances of violence against a woman in this world? Like, if any woman is attacked, is it painted as her fault? Or is it just because it happened during her party? Is it because she left the party?
But,
you know?
Maybe.
Which I wish they would have told us that, like, well, yeah, you left to meet this guy in the barn, and like that's why it happened. Like, that feels more,
there we go,
believable to me, mm-hmm, right? Like, oh, you went off to be by yourself with him, like, right, and then it caused this huge scandal. But like, she was literally they tried to kill her, and it's her, and she's being blamed for it. I feel like it's so misogynistic and terrible and like backwards. And
so it is. I actually think this is gonna sound crazy. The misogyny is not misogynistic enough. Like, we're not really getting we're not getting the through line of like, oh, like the victim blaming here is not making sense, because it's not actually misogynistic enough. Like, they're like, nowhere does someone say like, oh my God, like a woman who ruined her own party, or oh my 100%. God, she lured a man out into the woods, so like, you know, she earned it. Like, you know, that whole type of misogynistic thinking isn't really in the text anywhere. And like, that's actually what we need, because we need to know how fucked up it is that she's being blamed and she's sort of owning this scandal. But because the text sort of shies away from any of that stuff, like, it's misogynistic, but not in a way that we can really like identify. And the result is that like, it doesn't really make sense. And I was sort of waiting multiple times to, I thought that maybe like, who's this guy's Arpesa? I thought that maybe like she would spread a rumor or something like that, that would kind of put this into context. I don't remember her name either, but like, you know, there's like a few different angles that we could have taken, which we've just chatted about. But yeah, unfortunately, the big failing of this chapter so far is it's not misogynistic enough.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. Like, it should be a feature of the world. It should be an intentional thing rather than like us guessing at it. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating. So I wanted to also point out that in this sort of like passage of the book, she talks about how she's going to now become a free thinker, aka like a spinster, right? An outcast, because no one's going to want to marry her. And she says, no one chooses to be a free thinker. And then in another moment, she says, your name and island are all you have, and one doesn't stand without the other. Where was this energy before?
Right.
I guess she didn't. This is not like a fish out of water story. She grew up in this world. She should have known this from the beginning. Why didn't she care before? It should have been addressed.
Yeah.
Like, she could have talked about how she knew she was going to become nothing and her island was going to mean nothing, because now she's so ashamed she can't even look at her father's study when she walks past it. But this is what she's been wanting the whole book.
Yeah, I'm like, you got it.
Girl, make up your mind.
She does say, like, it's my awful selfish dream come true. And I'm like, yeah. So, like, you could have all of this, and you could have her be like, I didn't realize what I was setting myself up for. Right. Like, that'd be fine too. But instead, the text just situates her completely as like forlorn, which is so at odds. Even if you learn the wrong lesson or something like that, or like a repercussion like comes and gets you, like, you feel regret, you feel like humiliation, all these other things, but it feels like robotic. That it like feels like a different character, to be quite honest, like with a character with zero memory of every single thing she's done up until this point. And I'm like, where's the consistency? But
I agree.
I mean, who cares about any of this, because there's an island that smells like vomit floating around. So let's,
that is very true.
Let's talk about that. There's
someone named Master is mentioned, and I swear to God, I forgot who that was. So
he's one of the only
people who visits.
Oh, is that her, like her like tutor, like the combat tutor that told her not to cut an apple in half?
Oh, I guess so. I don't remember.
The island that. Basically, the governess was sent to, an island for, like, rehabilitation. And somehow this gets Livia to thinking about how, like, it's seen as a holiday, but really it's the worst thing ever. Yet hubbies, people from the hub, would love to go and spend, like, a life's worth of money on, like, these, you know, rehabilitation centers, getting, like, shock treatments and things.
There's actually two different places, There's Sunrise Island, which I believe that's, like, the rehab place, and then Paradise Holiday.
Oh yes,
where hubbies retreat. So that's like the vacation places.
But
right,
yes, like Paradise Island, where they go on Paradise Holiday. So like the hubbies like will spend a lot of money to go up there. But apparently, it's the best 2 days of any like poor person's life, and it's known for the abundance of refreshments. So it's basically like alcohol, I think, is what she's meaning here.
Yeah.
And it just causes people to have vision-inducing, mind-altering beverages that make them vomit. And you can smell the vomit from other islands. What?
This was giving so much classism to me.
Yes.
This was giving them talking about, like, can you believe people have to save their whole life to go to, like, a sandals resort for, like, five days?
I was gonna say this. Like, oh, my God. Like, you know, these poor people, like, save up to go to, like, you know, like...
Carnival cruise.
Cancun. Right. Like, oh, my God. Yeah, like a carnival cruise, something like that, too. Like, to just, like, vomit and they don't even remember it. Like, wow. Like, I was like, why? There's no reason for this to be in it.
At
like,
it all. Doesn't help. It's not like why they squish these two things together. Like, it has no place in the story. Like, why?
Yeah. So, anyways, I just needed to bring that up because I thought it was such a funny, stupid detail. But onwards, she talks about the free thinker thing. No one chooses to be a free thinker. Free thinker, I believe, is an actual, like, term in Drithian society, and I actually love that. I love that they're called free thinkers, but they're like spinsters and everyone hates them and they are like recluses. That's kind of fun. Her maids are avoiding her, yada, yada, yada. Oh, she's alone, except for Veda. So we get a Veda shout out. How's Veda handling this assassination attempt? She saw the whole thing.
I feel like she's just hanging out inside of the archives.
She's playing Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah, she's playing Roblox. Yes. She's like, fuck this.
Yes, she's galloping around Roblox currently. And then, let's see. Oh, but then, okay, this is important. Even as she's contemplating all of this, and she mentions that, like, Tamarius, she does briefly ask about him in italics. She doesn't know his name, being Cain. And Marius is, like, vehemently, like, do not ask about him. He's in, like, the council headquarters, a detail that I'm sure will come in handy soon. And she says, like, do not, like, think, like, don't think of him yet. Yet Livia's mind consistently strays to him. And then what follows is this, like, weird passage where she's, like, I think of him and I think of this kiss. And she's, like, weirdly, she's weird. Why are you booing?
So stupid.
She's like weirdly enamored, like with replaying this memory. Like, did he want to kiss me? Was it a nice kiss? Did I like it? Like, that's kind of where she's ended up at the end of this chapter, about like being isolated, her future being ruined, is that her mind is never far from this boy that just tried to kill her and ruined her life.
Yeah. Yeah. What an idiot.
I mean, who among us has not focused on a man trying to ruin
their life. I'm sorry, but he assaulted her, tried to kill her, and now she's like, I can't stop thinking about him. It's not great. It's giving straight men writing women vibes.
Yes. She can't get him out of her head. But so where it ends is, let's see, I'm just going to read the ending because I actually really like this. Perhaps this is what happens when you are left to your own devices. If this continues, they'll send me off to where Governess has gone. A sandals resort. Maybe we could do a double mental meltdown special at Sunrise Island.
I'm telling you right now, if we ever have live shows, that's going to be the name of it.
Yes. Oh, God. I'm coming in full Carnival Cruise merch.
I'm coming as a thumb.
Oh, my God. So continues.
No, I'll be Veda. Okay, keep going.
Okay, sorry. Continues. Something must happen soon, I think, looking out towards the clouds. And there it is, flying straight at me.
And that's the end of the chapter.
And who do we know that is zipping about the sky in like a little scooter, a little air scooter?
It's Lex.
It's Lex. So, oh my God. We're going to save this till the next episode. It's going to be the first meeting of Livia and Lex. Maybe. We don't know. We don't want to spoil anything. But
we'll see.
Jesus fucking Christ. It's about fucking time.
So do you have a rose and a thorn for this chapter, Ryan?
Okay. So there are a few. There's actually, it's a short chapter. Nothing really happens in it. There's a lot to comment on, though. And I think my rose is that I love that ending. I love the ending that she's like, and suddenly like, you know, my future is like racing at me in an airship. And like it's a great sort of like hooky ending. Like I immediately want to turn the page and see what happens next. My thorn is that should have been the start of a chapter, or like, I don't know, like we shouldn't be ending right here per se. Nothing really happens in this chapter. And I don't know, I feel like it was not spent on what it needed to be spent on. It either needed to be in the past, covering the multitudes of, like, you know, mental crises that have been happening on Helix Island, or it could have, like, picked up here. It sort of feels like it's one or the other, but at the same time, I'm contradicting myself because I do like it as an ending. I think it was, like, nice and snappy.
I think it was a good ending as well, yeah.
Okay, what about you?
Oh, what's your rose?
I don't know. My rose is that... Oh, my... No, my rose is that I like the ending, that I think the ending's good.
Oh, no, what's your thorn?
That
Did
I
you say a thorn?
That yes
that you I hate said, the ending said both
of, yeah I, just let me look I'm a multitude of contradictions. All right, I contain multitude. I'm complicated, deal with it.
Okay. I'm gonna say my thorn is where the chapter began, like the time jump. I really wish that it had started right after the ball. There was so much tension. It felt really high stakes. I would have loved to see her getting chastised, yelled at by like something. The PCF officers, like her wondering what's happening to Cain. All of these things would have been so cool to see in the moment. So I think it was squandered in them like kind of fast forwarding all the parts that we actually wanted to see. And then like just got to her thinking back on all the interesting parts, which is so silly.
Oh my God.
A rose was hard to find. I will say that the end was very good, but I also appreciated that at the very least, Marius was able to comfort her and let her know, like, hey, you're actually a victim in this whole thing.
Yes.
Because we spend the whole chapter of her being ashamed. Like, not even their employees, like, want anything to do with her.
Yeah.
And it just feels so violent towards someone who was just, like, almost murdered, a young girl at that. So to have that moment of compassion was amazing. But I also have got to say, I just love the governess having a breakdown. I feel like it makes so much sense, even though it doesn't. I absolutely loved it. I want to go to the double meltdown,
Sunrise
mental meltdown special at Sunrise Island. Take me there. Give me a Bahama Mama. I will be good.
Yes. What's funny about the governess having a meltdown is that it doesn't make sense really for the book, but it does make sense for the version of the governess that we have consistently designed. It's like our headcanon governess. Like, she would be having a mental breakdown.
She's like, oh!
Yeah. She's like running through the halls in Crimson Peaks, clutching her massive tits, and
as she should be,
as is her right, as is her right. So okay, and that is the end of chapter 15 of our lovely season 2 selection. Thank you, Hot Queens, for tuning in. Our consistent reminder to seek us out on social media. All the links are in our show notes, and also find us on Discord. Recently, there has been a renaissance of fan art and funny things happening on Discord. So if you are not on our Discord, you're only getting half the season.
It's very true.
Very behind the scenes. And if you want to follow me, Ryan, you can find all of my social links in the show notes. But consistently, it's the Ryan LaSala at a social media website of your choosing.
And if you want to follow me, Clarabelle, I'm at Clarabelle_Ortega pretty much everywhere as well. All the links are in the show notes. Go follow us. Go buy our books. We need money for lip injection.
Yeah. And, you know, those Double Men TB Sunrise specials.
They're expensive. They add up.
So send us on the vacation of our dreams to a carnival cruise in the sky. Thank you for listening, Hot Queens.
See you next week, Hot Queens. Bye.
Okay. I feel like an NPR person who's like, your contribution could send these co-hosts. We support you so that you support us. Stupid. Okay, goodbye.